You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we punctuate even the most mundane of accomplishments with fireworks. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, and if you have no problem being proud of what you do, of what you accomplish, then you have found yourself in the right place. Why don't you help us accomplish getting more listeners by telling a friend that this is a safe place? Wait, no. Not, you know what I mean. Whatever. Joining me this trip, and as we're recording on a Sunday, I'm sure celebrating a Father's Day, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Thank you, thank you. It's very heartwarming that you, one of my closest friends, remember that it is my first Father's Day. So, and not your girlfriend who remembered and who said it first, but you, my friend, remember.
Oh, sure, because the women remember and say things first, right? And I didn't save things for the show, right?
It just warms my heart, really, that you, and not your girlfriend, remember that it was my first Father's Day. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. Great.
Isn't it weird, though, that all you had to do was pop out a kid and now you get this extra day to celebrate you?
All I had to do was, quote, pop out a kid, unquote.
Well, and you didn't and even really have to pop out day. The kid, right? You just had to put the kid in there.
You do know how biology works, I hope. So
yes.
I didn't do the popping out.
Right. That's what I just said.
And I feel like in return for keeping a child alive, I get an extra day to celebrate keeping that child alive. Feels like an unfair trade in a certain direction. I think you underestimate that this child is basically a 24-hour-a-day, I-need-to-kill-myself machine, and you have to keep it from exploding.
Don't we rename the day Thanks for Not Letting Your Baby Die Day?
How about Thanks for Not Letting Your Baby Die Month, and then you all give me presents. No?
Also joining us, okay. From Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. All I can think of on Father's Day is, I think it was in season 3 of Farscape, where Crichton tells Dargo, tell him who your daddy is, and he says, I'm your daddy. No one?
Okay.
Is that a gay a really thing? No. Deep, it's obscure pull.
It's a hilarious scene. Yeah, it's Father's Day, or if you're trying not to be gender oppressive, I guess it's sort of unidentified domestic partner who raises you day? I don't know.
Well, I think a few years ago they tried to abolish Father's Day, didn't they? Because it was like a sign of the patriarchy or something.
Oh, geez.
Something like that. I don't know.
Isn't it like the reverse of the patriarchy? It's like getting rid of the patriarchy? Okay.
I don't know how any of this works anymore. I don't know if it's woke to not celebrate Father's Day or if it's woke to celebrate Father's Day.
Budweiser, I think you have to identify as a woman in order to celebrate Father's Day. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe Fiza is supposed to be celebrating Father's Day, and then you're supposed to be celebrating Mother's Day.
I see. That would be.
Wait, isn't she supposed to be celebrating in any way? Isn't Daniel just supposed to sit there and we all heap praise upon him because he's a father? Isn't that the concept of Father's Day?
Is that what it is?
I don't know. All I know is this introduction has lost steam. What say
lost
you?
Lost steam? We're only 4 minutes into the show.
I know. That's why I'm trying to move this along.
Fine. Let's go.
All right. Let's do that in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Well, if you want to give me a Father's Day gift, why don't you subscribe to our Patreon channel, patreon.com/themidside, where you can give us a few bucks every time we produce this thing right up in here. and we appreciate it helps us keep the lights on. Justin alluded to celebrating what you're proud of in the intro, and I think it's in reference to this story. I mean, if he's really as good a host as everyone believes he is, and if he believes he is, then it is a reference to this story, which is that the U.S. women's soccer team, who thrashed Thailand in the World Cup round something last week, Justin, I'm going to butcher terminology for this since I don't know anything about it, has been shamed for their, quote, disgusting, unquote, celebrations during their 13-0 win over Thailand. Yes, the Women's World Cup favorites, i.e. the U.S., thrashed the Minnows in Reims, France on Tuesday night, leaving their opponents in tears, and then were criticized by commentators and soccer fans for reacting to each goal as if it were their first. Thailand, apparently, was never a real threat to the U.S. national team, which plays again, guess what, today, on Father's Day, against Chile.
Right
even
now.
So, the three-time
they're up
3-0. World... Right now. The three-time Women's World Cup champions had no desire to go easy on their lesser opponent in their opening game, leading a 3-0 lead at the break, and then breaking the match wide open in the second half, with the players celebrating goal after goal after goal after goal. Striker Alex Morgan tied the tournament record with 5 goals and said after the match her team meant no disrespect, but simply wanted to position themselves for a run at a second consecutive title, but the internet and sports commentators were in fact not having it. At Global Jesus on Twitter said, okay, settle down, USA. You're up 11-0 against Thailand in the Women's World Cup. You don't need to celebrate the goals anymore. Be better. Other people, like at Nate Scott said, score all the goals, fine. Celebrate a sub coming in and grabbing a World Cup goal, great. Whole team celebrations when Morgan scores her 5th and you're up a dozen, eh. It went on and on and on, and people were basically calling these celebrations disturbing. And, yeah, we've heard a lot of this before, right, Justin? Not just with the women's World Cup team, but with sports in general, where we have slaughter rules now in children's sports and Belichick and the Patriots have often been criticized for, quote, running up the scoreboard, unquote. So what do you think about this? When you're dominating a team, do you have like a moral imperative to stop winning so much or to stop celebrating so much? What say you?
I just don't understand why we're shocked an American was celebrating a lot for leaving a Thai woman in tears after scoring on her a lot.
Oh, boy.
This can't be the first time in history. No, I mean, look, I can understand if it's like kids' sports or like youth sports or something like that. But when you're talking about the World Cup, this is what these people train for. This is what these women train for their entire lives, right? The U.S. women's team is known for being this good. The idea that they're supposed to hold back on their celebrations is absurd. The fact that they're supposed to not score as much is absurd. And look, I have to wonder, Daniel, William, I have to wonder if there is something else going on here. If the U.S. No. wins, they're going to have their 4th title. And to win a game 13-0 is unprecedented. I don't know if there's been a score that high. As you said, Alex Morgan tied for 5 goals in a game, the most. I just saw a stat up on the screen. I'm watching the game now. Oh, it actually went to halftime. So they're up 3-0 again in the second game. And actually, Chile's ranked a little bit worse. They're playing Chile right now. They're ranked a little bit worse in the world rankings than Thailand is. So maybe we have another destructive second half here. But I saw a stat when they scored the 3rd goal that they have tied the record now at 17 goals for most goals through the first 2 games. Oh, wait, no, 16. So they're 1 behind. The most goals in the opening 2 games in a Women's World Cup history. So they're on an unprecedented pace right now. Now, is that just because of their matchups? Is it because of how good they are? So I wonder if what's going on here is they're trying to get in these women's heads to make them doubt themselves and not try as hard. Because I'm going to tell you, watching these celebrations have been completely subdued in this game. I turned this on hoping they would score, figuring they would to see how they celebrated. And they really, after they scored, they would give a little fist pump, go up to each other and tell them they love each other. And then, like, slap each other five, and that was it. Even the fans were giving, like, golf claps in the stands. Now, maybe that's just the fans they happen to show on the feeds because they want to make the American fans look good. Although, typically in World Cups, they use the international feeds, and then they just put American commentating over it. Or they do, you know, whatever country, they use the feed from France and then put the... because the World Cup's in France, and then put the your commentator's feed over it. So I don't know if they're selecting the fans, but it just seemed to be there was a generally subdued atmosphere among the team and the fans. And I question if when they get to the knockout stages, because this is the group stage, right? And if they win this, they're basically through to the knockout stage. Will they be able to turn it back on again if they've now turned it off? If they've turned off that emotional engagement. Because the thing about sports is it's such a combination of mind and body. You have to be present in mind and body in order to be successful. So I have to wonder if this is not about the celebrations and this is about getting in the U.S. women's heads to ensure they don't win.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thought. You know, this is the world sport, right? This is soccer. This is something Americans aren't supposed to be good at. It's something that the rest of the world is supposed to be good at. And I can't help but think that there might be a little bit of anti-Americanism in here. Just a little bit of anti-Americanism. But, William, is there something else in here? Because some people are complaining, including Coach Jill Ellis, who, to her credit, did defend her team. She said, "I don't find it my job to harness my players and rein them in because this is what they dreamt about. This is for them. This is a world championship." But she also said, she alluded to the fact that there might be a little bit of sexism going on. She said, quote, "If this is a 10-0 in a men's World Cup, are we getting the same questions?" So what do you think, William? Is this because they're lady people?
I think in this case, their lady parts have nothing to do with it. As Justin mentioned, the dudes get criticized for this all the time. Maybe
Daniel mentioned that, to be fair.
Daniel mentioned that. But maybe it contributes some to the volume of words written on it, but not because the women that were winning, but because of the women who were getting beat on were women. I think the whole crying because you're behind 12 points or whatever has more to do with it. I don't know. What do you think, Justin? Is it the American, the hatred of achievement, or is it the, oh, we need to protect the women who are crying because they're behind 12 points?
I mean, I think it's both. I think it's all of the above. I mean, I think every answer we've given on this episode so far is completely correct. I mean, to lose 13-0, you have to quit, and you have to quit mentally. And I think it's very obvious the Thai team just gave up. I mean, Chile is down 3-0 right now, and they don't look anywhere near as defeated as Thailand looked. It's because, don't get me wrong, the U.S. played terribly in the first half against Thailand, and they played a lot better in the second half. But to lose that much, you have to have quit as well. And that's something they're saying as well. If the other team quits, do you keep playing? But at the same time, like, if you're on the field, keep playing, right? If you're going to quit, you need to actually quit. Like, just get the fuck off the field. That's up to you. If you want to say, we don't want to play anymore, then don't play anymore. And why aren't we criticizing the Thai women for that? Why aren't we criticizing them for their weakness? Why aren't we saying they got the result they deserved because of their mental weakness, their lack of mental fortitude? Nobody's talking about that. Nobody's saying, oh, the Thai women didn't belong on the field. And more fundamentally, they believe they didn't belong on the field. So this is the result that ended up. The whole point is to score as many goals as possible. And you're attacking the team who is scoring as many goals as possible. That's the really thing, Daniel, and everything you read, that's what bothers me the most. The person who said, be better.
Yeah.
So be better, you to have me to try means to be
score
worse.
More goals, right? I mean, the right, way the exactly. tournament is set up, they need to score more goals. So if you don't, I mean, if like you don't this, change happen, the rules, I guess, and, right, and yeah. not.
First to five wins.
Yeah.
Right? Then you won't have this problem.
Right.
It won't be an issue.
So better is being worse. So we're making a difference between being morally better and practically better. And you can't live a life like that. It's impossible. You're going to drive humans insane.
So I guess my question, Daniel, to you is, were the women supposed to be stoic, like some sort of Mr. Spock, and score the goal and then all come together and huddle and analyze their goal and then quickly run back to starting positions and score again, like some sort of
they were a step
robotic
away from
automatons?
That with the three goals today, they were a step away from that.
Yeah, and I think this is ultimately why what I find insidious about this, which is on a grand scale, and we've sort of said all this, but I'm just sort of summarizing, is that you must not celebrate your greatness, especially your own greatness. That is totally off limits in our culture. You can celebrate other people's greatness, but not your own. And I don't like that element of culture. I like when people are doing profound, unprecedented, amazing things. Even if it's not, you know, my team watching someone, Nick Foles, throw 7 touchdowns in a game or whatever it was, you know, is an incredible feat to watch happen, even though that's not Tom Brady. Watching people achieve, watching people be unapologetic for their achievement, especially, is life-affirming. I want more of that. Stop apologizing for being great. Stop apologizing for doing great things. Now, when I first read this, the headline for this especially, which is U.S. women's soccer team defends, quote, disgusting celebrations, you know, I half expected some sort of racial element or crudeness, or they were like taunting the Thai team, getting in their face and telling them they were awful or whatever. None of that occurred. And it would be a totally different case if that's what it was, if you were demeaning the other team. That is not a real celebration. But they were hugging each other. They were doing choreographed stuff. They were celebrating themselves and their teammates and their achievement. And that is exactly what we should want them to do. That's exactly what we should want everyone to do in our culture. And yeah, it sucks to be the Thai team, but you should be better, practice more, figure out a different strategy. And I think Alex Morgan...
Maybe give more funding to your women's sports programs, rest of the world. This is how fucked up we get, Daniel. Like, we need to criticize America when it's proven that the countries that are more forward-thinking on women's rights, or at least more forward-thinking on women's sports funding, are the ones that are more successful at the Women's World Cup. We seem to forget all moral context when we're doing things like this.
Well, of course we do. Because America is bad per se. We have to find a way to make them the villain because they're bad per se. So Alex Morgan said this, and I support this outright, unequivocally, 100% little emoticon. She said, quote, "I think it's disrespectful if we don't show up and give our best and play our game for 90 minutes. It's disrespectful to the Thai team, and I believe they wanted us to play them straight up." Yes! It is disrespectful for your opponent if you're that good to pull your punches. It is disrespectful not to give them everything that you have, because they're giving you, hopefully, everything they have. That is the point of competition. That is the point of sport. And it's not only disrespectful to the other team, it's disrespectful to yourselves, more importantly, if you don't show up and play your best. Not to mention your fans and your coaches and the whole system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So... yes, Alex Morgan, 100% correct.
You know, we see this in video games a lot. I realized I'm different than a lot of people I get matchmade with when I'm playing games. Even if we're behind, I'm not usually one that wants to surrender, even if it's basically hopeless. For the reason you just said, Daniel, because I'm getting that team's best, and it's rare enough that I want to see how I match against that, even if I'm behind. And it's what are you seeking to get out of the game, right? Do you value the game, or do you value winning? If that makes sense.
Yeah, what do you learn from this experience?
Yeah, that happened to me in high school. We were losing like 4-0 to another team, and it was like right at the end of the match, at the end of the game. And the other guy was just standing there with the ball. So I just went over there and I like tried really hard to steal it. And he started talking to me. He's like, "Dude, why are you still playing? The game's over." Because there was like a minute or so left and they had just stopped. But it's like, no, I play because I want to play the game, which means I'm going to go as hard as I can and try as hard as I can because I want to be as successful as I can in that time period. It's not about what the score of the game is. It's about I love playing the game.
Not to mention, right, that just as a practical sports point, crazy things happen. We've seen teams in the NFL, which is the sport I'm familiar with, which I keep going back to it, be up a ton and then lose in a time frame that seems impossible to lose in. Or look at the Falcons and the Patriots, where it was like it seemed like there was no conceivable way that the Patriots could come back from that deficit, and so the Falcons went easy a bit, and that ruined them ultimately. You can't do it. You can't.
Well, right, and that's exactly why I was making the psychology point, because the U.S. women, by continuing to go that hard and carrying that much, showed they have the winner spirit, whereas the Falcons showed they didn't, and that's why they lost.
Sorry, Falcons fans. But so, speaking of something else that people are upset about, this time the women's who are upset about it, there is fury. Fury, says the Mirror, over new Nike Air Max women's trainers, i.e. shoes, that, quote, look like an iron. Nike's new women's trainers, sponsored by an England women's footballer, have been slammed for resembling an iron. Shoppers say the Nike Air Max FF720, which sounds like an airplane, which has two cutouts and a thick, clear plastic sole, looks like a household appliance. They believe this sends out the wrong message, even though England star Fran Kirby and tennis player Laura Robson have endorsed the product. A spokesman for feminist group, quote, Not Buying It, that's the name of the feminist group, commented sarcastically, I'm sure they'll be doing this for men too. Of course, maybe it could be paired up with some extreme ironing, you know, when people, mostly blokes, iron while skydiving. And people also took to our favorite platform, Twitter, to share their disgust. One drew the connection, prompting a raft of replies with pictures of real irons and various captions. So, Justin, what does one do with this? Because the shoe vaguely resembles an iron, but when I showed this picture to my wife and said, what does the shoe make you think of? She said, quote, a shitty shoe, end quote. And I said, does it make you think of an iron? And she said, all shoes look like irons. So what the hell are we doing here?
Apparently just going to FISA to co-host the show from now on, because those were both of my takes. So
you know, I think we'll, of course, have links to these stories in the show notes and on the website, themidside.com/podcast. The shoe,
yes, good job.
The shoe looks to me like Crocs. Don't they look like Crocs? It's like all holes.
Yeah, lots of cutouts and no back.
Yeah, this breathability in shoe crap is terrible. Like, it's terrible when you're wearing, like, mesh shoes. Like, I have a pair of Under Armour shoes that if I go outside and it's, like, slightly windy, my feet get cold because all the wind blowing through my shoes. Like, isn't the point of clothing to protect you from the elements?
Yes, but now we are so protected that we need
protection from the patriarchy. Shoes can't just protect you from the elements any longer. They must protect you from the patriarchy.
That's right.
Look, Fize is completely correct. I mean, every shoe looks vaguely like an iron. So are we just going to get rid of shoes completely? Are we going to have to read? We can't even do that because of the shape of a foot. A foot looks vaguely like an iron. Should we cut off all women's feet? Maybe the Chinese had it right with foot binding. We need to make your feet look less like irons.
Hold on. Developers of Midside, listeners who are developers, instead of the Silicon Valley app, we now have a new app. We need iron or shoe. And and I think we can train some AI to help with this problem.
Well, maybe we need to go back to the old-fashioned iron. And what I mean by that is the iron used to be flat, right? And then it just had a handle that you did it with. And then they made it look more like a shoe because it's easier to use. So then when we have this algorithm William's talking about, it'll be very easy to tell the difference between an iron and a shoe.
Right, exactly. I mean, even I don't like this culture of trying to find ways to be offensive. So let's say it does look like an iron.
No. Finding ways to be offensive is great. Finding ways to be offended is bad.
Sorry, offended, yes. misspoke. Finding ways to be offensive is. Please, please keep doing that. So let's say, let's concede that it looks like an iron. Isn't the question, so effing what? Who cares? It looks like an iron. Some things look like other things. Revelation. More at 10. Like, what? Who the hell cares?
Shouldn't we be more mad that there are a lot of women out there that look like men?
Isn't the sexist part of this, or isn't the quote-unquote offensive part of this, necessarily linking ironing with women? Like, I iron stuff. I'm bad at it, but I do it. I'm horrible at it, but I still do it. The point being, you know, why, I mean, iron may be historically associated with women, but why are we still doing it?
Yeah,
if you want it to change, stop doing it. Stop associating it.
I had two sisters growing up. I can't remember hardly any times where they had to iron their clothes, and I had to iron mine a lot. Especially like when I lived in San Diego and had to, you know, dress like, you know, more business formal all the time. I had to iron shit all the time. Do you both you guys live with women? Is there ironing happening outside of your own clothes in your house?
No. Two things. One is
am I allowed to answer that question, or am I oppressive?
You're oppressive.
No, my girlfriend, she doesn't use an iron. Have you ever seen one of these steamers? I've never heard of this before, and I tried to use it, and all I did was get my shirts wet. So you use steam to
wait,
to
you
get
got
it to,
wet, or the clothes got wet?
The clothes. I said all that happened was the shirts got wet. Come on.
Okay.
Fucking pervert. But no, it's you use steam to release the wrinkles on your dress shirts rather than an iron. I mean, it's the same concept, except... It's you know, you're just not putting hot metal on your shirt. You're just putting steam on it. And I tried to do it for like a month and a half, and I just kept failing so terribly that she just started doing it for me. So I don't know if that says more about my oppressiveness as a straight white male or my incompetence as a straight white male, but there you have it.
Look, two things. One is I've learned the trick of hanging my clothes in the bathroom and closing the door and taking a hot shower, and that releases most of the major wrinkles. Doesn't take care of it all, but it if there are little things, it's fine. And then two,
is there no odor when you do that?
No. Odor?
Well,
what,
I smell
what does
really
your
badly
shower
when
smell
shower
like while you're taking
the
your
gym
shower.
Is what it smells like.
Really?
I smell really bad after
Midsiders
the gym.
Weigh in on this. This
strange. Is fascinating. Okay. This is a good pod.
The really good pod of just silence, just looking stunned.
maybe it's hypervigilance, man. I don't know. I smell really bad. All right.
When you shower, like you're the bathroom while you're showering. Okay, whatever. Moving on. Weird. And then two. Does anyone know that dry cleaners are essentially free now? Like the competition in dry cleaning is ludicrous, and either there's coupons or rewards or whatever, and like to get a shirt dry cleaned is like between $1 and $2. So. I don't take all my clothes to be dry cleaned all the time, but every once in a while I will do it and get everything cleaned and pressed and ironed, and then I hang it up and I don't have this problem.
Ready for some product placement, Daniel?
Okay.
You can do at-home dry cleaning with Dry-L dryer sheets. You get a bag and you put the sheet in the bag and it dry cleans it for you. You just put it in the dryer and then you use the steamer or the iron and you don't ever have to pay for a dry cleaner again.
It's $2. It's less than a medium cup of coffee at Starbucks.
Yeah, but I can get 10 of those for like $8. So I'm saving money.
But then I still have to do the actual ironing part, which as I led with, I'm terrible at. So I don't want to do that. I want them to do it because they're experts and my pants and shirts get pressed very nicely. So point being, why are we associating ironing with women? This seems to me like the sexist part of this story. Feminists. Jeez. Okay.
I mean, it is, but I think what they're trying to do is just completely destroy gender. So even any kind of association of it is what they're upset about.
I guess, but I don't get the association.
I think this is made a new game. I'm going to work on this. We need to have, like we had the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon, we need the 7 degrees of patriarchy. So what we'll do is we'll maybe, well, yeah, it'll be less than seven. We'll have people submit the most innocuous images, and we'll see how quickly we can connect it to the patriarchy.
I like it, but let's tweak this a little bit. First of all, it's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, and it's Kevin Bacon because it rhymes with separation, so we need to find something. 6 degrees of oppression doesn't really rhyme, so we need something. There we go. 6 degrees of reparations. Got it.
That doesn't quite work, but it's closer. This reminds me of the game played a couple weeks on Twitter called Is Blank Racist / Sexist, and it was just type in literally any phrase or word or noun or whatever into Google, and then the words is racist or sexist, and see what comes up. And there was lots of great ones. Breakfast is apparently racist. Outer space is racist. Farting is racist.
Wait, is outer space racist because it's black?
And no one can hear you scream.
All these super woke articles, but basically it's a clickbaity algorithm, and if you were a really savvy site, you would just have these articles auto-generated by AI and just go through the dictionary and make every noun is racist and or sexist, and then just have, you know, crap words come up.
Yeah, because I was going to say, Daniel, isn't the answer to that question yes?
It is, indeed. So, speaking of feminism, Democratic Representative Norma Torres, who is a Democratic representative in the California House, slammed her fellow members of the California Congress as, quote, sex-starved males during a heated debate over abortion on Wednesday. Speaking on the House floor, the California Democrat said, quote, Mr. Speaker, it is tiring to hear from so many sex-starved males on this floor talk about a woman's right to choose. Torres was responding to comments from Representative Ross Spano, who is a Republican, during a debate about spending on abortion in appropriations bill for the Department of Health and Human Services and other agencies, according to roll call. Republicans were introducing amendments to strike out a provision of the bill that would prohibit the funding of Trump administration regulations that would allow conscientious objections to providing abortions, roll call reported. Spano said, quote, the legislation before us not only strips pro-life provisions, but includes language that undermines efforts to promote life. He argued that the Democrats' legislation would result in Americans' tax dollars being forced to subsidize entities that kill unborn children. And I think I misstated something earlier. She is a representative from California, and this did not happen in the California House, but in the actual House of Representatives. Even more interesting. So when asked if she wanted to clarify her comment, she said, quote, if it pleases my colleague on the other side, I will withdraw my comment about sex-starved males from the floor, prompting even more outrage from Republicans on the floor, because she essentially allowed to keep her remarks in the rephrase in the congressional record. Justin, sex-starved males? Are those the only people who comment on abortion issues now?
Yeah, I don't get where this comes from, and I've never understood where this comes from. Somebody's probably going to have to explain it to me. Why is it automatically that if you're anti-abortion as a male or pro-life as a male, however you want to say it, however you want to label that side, that women on love, especially women who look like they don't have a lot of sex on the left, call them sex starved? Is it because they're saying only men who don't have sex would want women to not have abortions? Because men who do have sex would want women to have abortions so they don't have to have the responsibility of the consequences of sex? Is that what they're saying? I can't figure it out. Like, where does this even start from? Like, I understand a lot of these things these people say are illogical, but how is this? This has been a label I've seen my entire life, that, you know, men who want to comment on women's issues are just, you know, they're lonely virgins who don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, could I use that logic for folks when they talk about gay rights? Can I say you're just a closet case if you're commenting on gay rights issues and you're not?
They do
gay
say
or bi?
That. That's a trope in movies and TV shows now, that whatever the guy is who's straight and most belligerent against gay rights and most worried about them is a closeted case. That was in American Beauty, and it was considered brilliant when it was so trite and didactic.
Trite and didactic. Get out your SAT dictionaries.
You know, I do get the reverse of that, right? Like, when I talk about my opposition to collective rights, I get told that I'm a self-hating gay. So,
well, it's just a very simple ad hominem tactic, right? Which is that you don't legitimately believe in the ideas you're espousing. You're espousing them because of X, Y, and Z negative thing about you.
Yeah, but how is that connected to sex starve, though? Right? Like, but like, let's say I was straight. I know this is going to be, that's a lot of imagination right there. But then also on top of that, imagine that
being straight.
Yeah, wow. Imagine, like, me saying things about women's issues, but how does advocating, quote unquote, against women's issues lead me to more sex? How does that work?
Well, I guess it's because your brain is so starved from not having sex that you just can't think straight. And if you were to have more sex, then you would support a woman's right to choose.
Right, and that's something that would always happen when you were young, right? I mean, I don't know about if you ever heard this, Daniel, but for me, people would always say, oh, you know, if you just get laid, it would make sense to you. It's just because you're a virgin. Just get laid. Like, suddenly your understanding of the world changes. And then you know what happens the first time you have sex? You feel exactly the same way you did before you had sex.
Like the exact same way?
Well, not in the immediate afterglow, but it's not like 5 minutes later. It's like, oh, wow, I fucked a woman. Suddenly I'm a leftist now.
Fair enough. So I don't know the exact connection, but it's an old tactic, both on the left and the right, which is you have no legitimacy to comment on this issue because there's something defective about you, and if only you would change that defect, you would see my point of view. And the left does it very well because they have a lot of fun catchphrases and bumper sticker kind of things, but the right does it to some degree, but in different spheres. So,
well, I mean, that's what Trump was excellent at, right? He just gives you a label, and then that label is why you're defective.
Yeah, Crooked Hillary or his best one was Low Energy Jeb, but
yeah, about that. The left doesn't. I mean, everything's a Nazi now, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Is that all there is to say about that? Yes, everyone is a Nazi. Moving on.
Well,
so,
no, my point was that's the major thing the left does, and that's what they're good at it as, is everyone who disagrees with them. We've seen this with every Republican candidate, right? I mean, now Trump's a racist, right? Was Trump a racist in the 90s when he was a Democrat? No, but every Republican presidential candidate is a racist and a Nazi, is worse than Hitler. I mean, it's even to the point now that Zack Snyder is a Nazi. Like, you can't like anything or do anything. What wasn't it? Bill Belichick was a white supremacist at 1.2 for having white wide receivers.
Yes, indeed. So everyone's a white supremacist. Everyone's a Nazi. Everyone hates women. Let's move on to Quebec. So Quebec cannabis stores posted a $4.9 million loss after their first fiscal year. And people are wondering what the hell to do. So, the Société Québécoise du Cannabis, Quebec's online and storefront cannabis sales network, generated $71 million in total revenue after its first abbreviated fiscal year of operations, but posted a $4.9 million loss that will be covered by the province's taxpayers. So the SQDC reported that the $4.9 million loss represents a non-recurring startup cost, and that a profit is expected to be realized over the course of the next fiscal year, which runs from the start of April of 2019 to the end of March 2020. And here's the fun kicker for everyone. So keep in mind that the taxpayers will be on the hook for this $4.9 million loss when you're listening to this. Between June 12 and March 30th, the sale of nearly 10 tons of cannabis at stores and online generated $21.7 million in tax revenue for the province. The SQDC outlet and websites began selling products in October, the day the recreational use of cannabis in Canada became illegal. So right now, Canada's system is very much like some liquor stores in the South, i.e. where I live in... where I used to live in Virginia, the liquor stores are owned by the government. You can't actually have a private liquor store. It's all run through the Virginia Department of Alcohol. So, Justin, lots of layers to this story. Quebec owning the means of sale for cannabis and unable to make a profit, yet forgetting the fact that they brought in $21.7 million in tax revenue. So it feels like the taxpayers don't actually lose anything. Unclear what the hell's going on here.
Well, yeah, that's a couple issues there. The one thing you just said is the language is strange. If the stores are bringing in that much money in tax revenue, isn't that how much they're making? Or is that how much the people are being taxed to afford the stores? So largely this seems like an accounting issue. But really this is an issue of how do you fuck this up? Isn't this a perfect example of putting government in charge of something makes it worse than it ever could be? How do you fuck up the sale of legal marijuana? Like, doesn't it seem like that would be like the easiest product in the world to market? And do they own the means of production? Because did you see in the story where it also says they had to make the stores only open 4 days a week because they didn't have enough product? You know, the whole war on drugs, there's too many drugs on the streets. When it becomes legal, suddenly there's not enough drugs.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure, but I think it was Milton Friedman who said something like, if you put the federal government in charge of the Sahara Desert in 5 years, there'd be a sand shortage, which is sort of what this feels like to me, which is this should be any competent business owner could make money off of this, yet the government has found a way to lose $4.9 million.
Competent? There are stoners out there right now doing this under the table illegally that are making more money.
And
they're literally high all day.
Healthcare. Remember that. The same people who can't make money selling pot also run the healthcare system in Canada. And that's how some people on the left want it to work in the United States. So, William, do you think, as a store manager, that you could make a profit selling pot if it were legal in the United States?
I think I could manage to do that. I mean, there's some cases in where you would, you have some options as you amortize your capital expenses over years. So you might structure it purposely so that you take losses in the first couple years, but this sounds a little high to me, and not in the good way.
It's an interesting question in terms of, let's take this from a strangely philosophic libertarian objectivist perspective, which is if the legislation is moving the ball toward the direction of decriminalizing pot, i.e., Let's make it so that we don't arrest people for pot, we don't put them in jail for it, but we can only have the government selling it. Do you think that's a decent enough compromise to support that kind of legislation in the United States federally?
I don't think so. I think if something is so dangerous that the government must control it and make it illegal, that's one thing. There's certain like chemicals that are so dangerous. They have tons of regulations around them. But if you're saying it's okay for this thing to be in your house and for you to consume it, I think it's also okay for you to sell it.
There is an interesting component to that, Justin. And we do this with many things. We talked about it a little bit on the show before where it's like, yeah, your consumption of it or your giving it away or like you're trading it with people is totally fine. But once you add the money element, government needs to be involved. Make it transparently mobbish?
Well, hey, to make it even more politically charged, we do this with organ donation and we do this with adoption, right? You can go have a baby and the government's not involved other than giving the social security number when the baby's born, right? And then, so in other words, the presumption is parents, like, the government has to investigate to see if parents are being abusive. But the reverse is true for adoption. If you're going to adopt, you have to prove to the government that you parent in the style acceptable to the government.
Yeah. A little weird, right? But we do with everything. I mean, if you think about basically anything that we engage in, let someone sleep at your house for free, totally fine. Ask them to give you $20, and now the government's involved. Now you're operating an illegal hotel. Give someone a ride to the airport for free. No problem. Ask them for gas money. And now you're operating an illegal taxi. Have sex with whomever you want. Even be a gold digger. Have sex with someone so you can inherit half their estate. No problem. Ask that same guy for $50 for the act of having sex. Now the government's involved. So what is it about money? What is the magical property of money that turns the thing from an innocuous activity between two individuals to something the government must put its ham-handed fist into?
Well, money is evil.
That's $100. Daniel. If you want the fist, that's like $100. It's not 50.
Thank you, William. Visuals. Thank you.
I don't know the prices of that kind of stuff. That's weird.
So, I mean, it's always boggled my mind. People tend to think it's totally fine. Well, yeah, if you're going to sell it, the government needs to be involved. Well, why? If I give it away, not a problem. If I sell, and I'm talking about anything, I'm not talking about my body. I'm not talking about sex.
Doesn't it come down to fundamentally believing that people aren't equal traders, that people are always trying to fuck each other over, and that government needs to be in there for protection? Now, I mean, I agree that government needs to be there to enforce contracts that are not upheld in good faith or violated. But the presumption that government needs to regulate all of it is coming from the assumption that even from just trying to trade with someone, you're automatically trying to fuck them over. The idea that no one's trying to make equal, fair trades, that it's everyone's trying to get one over the other person.
Yeah, it's an inherently anti-capitalist mentality. The act of making money is somehow in and of itself bad, and therefore the government must be involved.
I would say more fundamentally, it's an anti-human mentality. It's that humans are fucking terrible. Therefore, they can't be capitalists, trade with each other.
But, see, I don't go that far because, again, it's not the government's trying to be involved in the person you have sex with for free or the person you give a ride with for free, even though you could be trying to screw that person over in any number of ways. It's when the money is involved. And this is why I say it is transparently mobbish. It's like a cartel. It is, oh, we're not getting our VIG, therefore it's bad. But as soon as we get our cut, we'll let you do whatever you want.
I agree with everything you're saying, and I wish it was still just that way. But I see your mob, and I raise you social justice.
soon, right?
Yeah. I mean, I alluded to it before when I said we had the Green New Deal. How long until we get the sexual New Deal? It is coming. All right, I think that's a good end of this segment, unless you have anything else you want to say, William. Do you want to chime in? You got any final thoughts?
No, I think we're ready to go.
All right, well, sometimes things can get very hopeless here when we're talking about the news, but worry not. Things are getting better, I believe. I talk about that in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. I think we're in for a very uplifting edition of The Hopeful Romantic this episode. But before we do that, I just want to note that if you go to themidside.com, each week I am going to be writing out a full review for the movie I'm going to be reviewing on the podcast. I just thought about it, and I just think that's a better way of having synergy with the show and the website. And I also think it's a better way to get more formal reviews out. So you can hear what I have to say on the show, and then you can hear more detailed review or read, or you can hear it if you use like a text reader on the website. Our website is not ADA compliant. I'm sorry.
Oh no. You just invited lawsuits.
You can still do that. Yeah, I know. They're going to sue me. Thankfully, it's not a state website. Yeah, so you can go read the full one. This week, I reviewed Shaft. And Shaft. I want to start by asking if you guys remember. I remember that I hugged the trailer. Do you guys remember if you hugged the trailer or not?
I don't remember watching it, so no.
I think I remember hugging it, but I'm sure someone will comment on Discord.
I love how William just subtly outsourced that. He was like, I don't want to think about this. Somebody will think about it for me. They're not our minions, William. I think we all hugged it. I mean, William, I'm sure you hugged it because it involves guns.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Action and guns. Yeah. But I think this movie is an accomplishment. And when I say that, I don't mean like it's an accomplishment in the sense that like it's the greatest movie ever made. I would say it's like a solid B. But for this movie to exist in today's day and age is a major victory. When you think of Shaft, Daniel, what do you think about?
Isaac Hayes.
Okay, sex. What about content-wise? Sex, okay, political incorrectness, right?
Of course, the 70s when it was out, so.
Right, toxic masculinity, perhaps?
Maybe.
What they would define as toxic masculinity?
I mean, I don't think about those things, but I yes and.
Okay, well, you think about masculinity. My point is they would define it as toxic. So it could have been very easy for this to be an apology, right? This was not an apology. This was a film that hopefully we're going to see more of this. This is a film about getting masculinity back in the same way Cobra Kai is about that as well. So I think this is worth seeing. I think you should see it if you're sick of the content that's in movies nowadays. If you're sick of all this social justice crap, if you're sick of this anti-male crap, if you're sick of this political correctness, go see this movie. This is largely an antidote to it. Don't see this movie, though, if you're looking for like a directorially spectacular movie. It's just not that kind of movie.
But are there guns and sex? Because that's what
that's
I look
the
for
other
in
thing. If you like guns, then you are going to love this movie. Especially the stylization gets very good in a couple scenes involving the guns. In fact, I'm going to say something. Zack Snyder. And the reason I'm going to say that is, I swear to you, and I'm not making this up like some of the crazy people on Twitter, there are a few shots that are lifted directly from Zack Snyder movies, and I have to believe it's an intended homage at how obvious. I mean, when my girlfriend turns to me and goes, that's a Zack Snyder shot, then you know that it's obvious and intentional. And sex, I mean, it's not as like, look, it's not porn if that's what you're looking for, but I mean, it's sexualization is a big part of the movie and the interaction between men and women. So that's a big part, but it's not like porn. You don't see people fucking. So sorry, William. Although I don't know why you'd want to watch William. I don't know why you personally would want to watch straight people fuck.
Because he identifies as a woman.
Well, it's not about watching them fuck. It's about seeing the sexual dynamic. That's an essential part of Shaft.
Yeah, and that's fair. But speaking of identifying as a woman and straight people fucking, there's actually an episode of the new Black Mirror. I don't know if you've seen the new season at all.
Oh, no, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, well, this is more the premise than a spoiler, but there's a Street Fighter type game that it's a VR version of it that you just attach to your temple, and you can be the opposite gender, and you can have sex rather than fight in this VR game. So it's sort of interesting that way. I wouldn't say it's particularly well done, but that just came to my mind because I watched that.
I like how the Shaft review has turned into the Black Mirror review.
Well, I already said why you should and shouldn't see it, and go read the review on the website, and then have a conversation about it on social media and in Discord. Let's move on now to the other thing.
They're premature there, William.
Yeah.
So excited.
Yeah, he got so excited that we were talking about people fucking. He just prematurely said.
Trailer takedown all over the place.
Yeah. And if you want to know about Trailer Takedown before we review it on the show, you can go watch the trailers on the website, themidside.com/podcast. That's where all the trailers are posted the Saturday before the episode. Or you can watch them during the episode. You can do it at, pause it. We talk about one, you watch it, or you watch one, we talk about it. You have that option.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Loose is an interesting movie to me. It's about this student who's very successful, this black student, and then his teacher seems to be going after him. Although I would like to point out the teacher is also black, so that adds to this. And trying to make him less successful. And then it becomes sort of this psychological drama about why is this student really a bad student, even though he's seen as a good student the whole time? Or is the teacher really after him? What is going on with this? For me, the way this trailer was shot, the way this, the pacing of the scenes, the tone of it, and the content was, it worked for me. I thought this was very good. I think this could be good, you know, depending on the story, right? This movie is going to be all about the story, where if the story goes in a bad, stupid direction, it'll be ruined. But I think there's a lot of potential here. So for me, this is a hug.
Hug.
Daniel?
Yeah, so you forgot to mention that the kid's parents are white and he was adopted from Africa.
Oh, right. Which is
another element to this. So there's a lot of racial overtones. There's a lot of cultural overtones. There's a lot of... So this has many directions where it could go and be woke garbage. So there's a, you know, some caution there. But the way... So this could be like another Get Out type of movie or whatever his other one was, Us, something like that. Or if the trailer is being honest and communicative of how it goes, it's more just a story about gaslighting and psychological warfare between these two people and who is telling the truth. And that could be very interesting. So I will very tentatively hug this.
Hug.
Daniel, William. I'm with you about where it could go, but in today's day and age, especially with, you know, the black kid adopted by the white kids, if there were social justice content in the movie, wouldn't they have put it in the trailer?
Yeah. I mean, you have a point, and it's likely that they would, but who knows now? I have no, you know, it just could be not a suppressed premise, but just a of course kind of premise. Like, of course this is the direction we're going to go. So, I don't know. I it's interesting. So I tend to the teacher, by the way, we keep forgetting key things, is played by Octavia Spencer. So tremendous actress in this role.
Fair. William?
So yeah, I had a different worry. I was worried here this is going to be a theme of automatically the smart people are evil, which we see as a suppressed premise in a lot of movies. So it's interesting to me. I hope that it says trailer number one. So maybe another trailer will give it more, quash some of my fears. But right now, it's a very questionable hug.
Hug? Second trailer.
Brittany Runs a Marathon is about a fat girl named Brittany deciding she wants to run the New York Marathon because she's decided she wants to get in shape. And as she gets in shape, her life gets better and she's able to take more control of her life. Also, at the beginning of the trailer, she's shown doing a lot of unhealthy drinking. Maybe it could perhaps be described as binge drinking. And her life is just terrible in the beginning. I have to say that I was emotionally moved by this trailer. The first time I watched it, I was like, wow, this is a movie we need. Why do we not see more movies like this? And how is this movie succeeding? It was like a Sundance finalist or something, one of the awards it put up at the front. So it's like, how did this succeed? And I think this might be an Amazon movie as well. So is this just succeeding because it's about a woman and they're missing that the content is actually against social justice and all of these things? It's not aligned with their values. It's about someone making the choice to improve her life and actually improving her life through hard work. I am going to see the crap out of this movie. Hug.
Hug.
Daniel?
So as this begins, and she's a terrible person and she's seeing a doctor and he's telling her to lose weight, it looks like we're going to be stuck in Lena Dunham-esque naturalism hell. And so I got very annoyed right away. And then it started to win me back. There's a joke in the trailer when she's interviewing for a job and the person hands her a doll and says, I'm going to need you to just perform CPR on this doll. And she brings the chest up to her ear and goes, I'm sorry, this child is dead. That was an interesting way to go with that scene that I'd never seen before in comedy. So it started to win me back. You know what this movie reminds me of, Justin? Is it reminds me a lot of Silver Linings Playbook, which could have gone down the naturalism hell of all these horrible people who have problems and actually went in the direction of you can make your life better. And when they said something to the effect of, because the one social justice element here, kind of, and I'm not saying it's really there, but maybe this is what the Sundance people are in tune with, is this whole thing about it's not really about her weight and her body. But it says in the trailer outright, it was never about your weight. It was about taking responsibility for your own life. And I thought, absolutely, that's the message. So I'm going to hug this.
Hug.
Okay, I didn't. That was not my sentiment.
Yeah, but we all know, Daniel, that it's mind and body. So anyone who takes control of their body is going to be taking control of their life as well. Otherwise, your body's just going to go back to where it was before.
Yeah, it's an interesting message. I just wonder if that element of it, the strange body positivity thing, is going to be the one woke element that Sundance and Amazon are gonna, you know, try to force upon us. But who knows? Looks good otherwise.
You know what that's called? That's called PTSD. That's from being abused by too many movies. William, go
Social
ahead.
Justice SD.
Yeah, I was super skeptical. My journey was just like Daniel. I was like, oh boy, here we go. But it seems like it has a message that I really believe in. And it looks interesting. Maybe just the interracial, you know, love interest and having the lead character be a woman is how they slipped in this non-social justice message. So, yeah, I'm going to see this.
Hug.
Speaking of that guy... I was going to say something before we went on to the third trailer.
Well,
but
you know, when I have already pressed the buttons, it makes the sound. So,
okay, it's fair. That's fine. But no, as I was going to say, I thought the white guy was going to be her love interest the whole time, because like they find each other on the same journey and like they can identify with each other. Right. The whole getting in shape thing. And then that guy who started to help her, the Indian guy, he reads as gay to me.
I thought he was going to be gay. Yes.
Yeah. So very strange. But anyway, go ahead and hit third.
Third trailer.
Lady World is... You know what? Fuck this. I can't even like... how do I summarize this? It's like...
I can summarize it for you. Hold on. I can summarize it for you. Did any of your high school friends try to go to a drama school and then invite you to one of their crazy like avant-garde drama shows? Plays or whatever they would call them. This no. is that movie.
Yes. I had to look up what it was really about because the trailer doesn't give you anything other than total garbage.
It seems like a bunch of women trapped in a room together. Like I put this, I watched this trailer and I put this in here because it's supposed to be like the female Lord of the Flies or some shit.
Yes. It is supposed to be it's supposed to be a retelling of Lord of the Flies, but so this is how the movie is actually described across the internet, which is 8 teenage girls are trapped in an endless birthday party in the canyons after a massive ecological event. Cut off from civilization in a ruined and powerless house, the girls should organize but instead exploit each other's fears, devolving into a dynamic of manipulation and control.
So this is a sidequel to The Happening?
And in this one, too, nothing happens. So, Justin, what do you think? This is a triumph for feminism. Didn't you see the quotes from the reviewers in the trailer? It's the movie the world needs right now because it's all about empowering the woman's voice.
How is this empowering the women's anything? It's the color design is... look, this is... Oh my god, I don't fucking understand. Like, all we do is complain about how Zack Snyder's movies are dark, right? Is there one color in this fucking trailer besides black and white?
Why didn't they just make the over made up faces? That's the only thing that has color. The thumbnail right now for me is the chick that looks like she's in clown makeup.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of pink in there, right? But otherwise, it's black and white. It's just, oh, I guess maybe her shirt's a little bit blue. I don't understand this on any level. I don't understand how anyone can pretend that this is good. This is the point where, look, I can watch some naturalistic movies and be like, okay, I can see where there's some artistry in here, and I can understand why people can convince themselves this is good. I don't know how you watch this and you convince yourself that it's good. That is my question with this trailer. How do you watch this and you go, you know what, that looks entertaining. And you don't look, as William said, this is just avant-garde bullshit. Tackle.
Lord of the Flies, more like Board of the Flies. This looks like absolute, unequivocal garbage. Tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, I saw this play in like 2004. At least I think I saw it because I stopped paying attention. So, no. No, no, and no.
Tackle. Final trailer.
Ad Astra stars Brad Pitt as an astronaut who goes into space and then something goes wrong and he comes back, but they want to put him in charge of a mission because the reason he became an astronaut is his dad was an astronaut. And it turns out his dad was doing experiments of some sort that could endanger the Earth or help the Earth or something of that nature. And he's the only one who can...
Endanger the entire solar system, Justin.
Okay, sorry. The entire solar system. Sorry for being Earth-centric because we live on Earth and there are no other living creatures on any other fucking planet. I'm sorry. So the entire solar system could be in danger, and he's the only one who can handle it for some reason because his dad was involved in this. And his dad is Tommy Lee Jones. Where's he been, guys? Where's Tommy Lee Jones been? Apparently he's actually been lost in space this whole movie, the whole time, because you know that at some point in this movie, he's going to go, when he goes back into space, he's going to run into Tommy Lee Jones, his dad. That has to happen in this movie. You know that's
what it
means.
Is this a Men in Black sequel?
Maybe it is. Maybe it's Secretly. A Men in Black. Maybe it's better than Men in Black International. Either way, I'm really interested in what William has to say for this, because for me, this is why I watch science fiction. This looks like a good science fiction movie. It looks benevolent. It looks positive. It looks entertaining. It looks emotional. I am in. Hug. Daniel?
I'll grant you all that. My thought in watching this was, didn't I watch this when it was called Interstellar? I'm pretty sure I did. And it didn't star Brad Pitt. It starred Matthew McConaughey. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess there's some difference about this, but I guess I'll see it. Tentative hug? That's all I got.
Hug.
William?
So, yeah, I'm going to see this movie. It is sci-fi. It looks like it has good production value. The plot looks interesting. There's some mysteries to unlock. It seems like it's an original story, which is also something that's rarer. That seems like the only sci-fi we get these days is based on some other prior works. I know they set out with this. The director, I think, or the writer, said they wanted to depict, quote, the most realistic depiction of space travel that's been put in a movie, which when I saw the trailer, I was like, he's untethered to a lot of things out in space, which is not very realistic. But that aside, if we're actually going to talk about, like, set in the near future space travel, that's going to be interesting to see. And guns on the moon. I'm definitely into this. So hug.
Hug.
Let's make a movie and just call it Guns on the Moon.
I bet there's a porno called that already. So we might have to change the name.
Oh.
I mean, isn't that already kind of the premise of the moon is a harsh mistress?
Hey now. Spoiler alert.
All right. Well, we're talking about things that could possibly make William happy. Why don't we continue to do that in Life on the Midside?
Just shut up and smile, yeah.
If you listened to last week's episode, you know that William was conscientiously objecting to us talking about a straight pride parade. No, he was, William was at an actual pride parade. I believe you were at the West Hollywood Pride Parade, correct?
Yep, LA Pride. And
you told me you were doing some research for the show. So what did you learn at LA Pride, and what do you want to talk to us about in regards to LA Pride?
So this was the first year I've been to LA Pride. I've been to San Diego Pride a few times, and mostly because it was like on my street and I could see it from my balcony. And in Baltimore, I've been to some of the Sunday Pride activities, which traditionally were more business friendly and family oriented. But this was my first LA Pride, and you know, it's everything you would expect if you've ever been to a sort of quote-unquote ethnic pride festival of some kind. But it's always there are a couple things that I figured we had to talk about on the show. So the first part I just want to get out of the way right away. I was there as part of my work, and we had a huge crew of people. We were probably the largest group in the parade. We had like almost 500 people there, and you know, that was great. That was my main motivation for going. But as we're going through the pride parade, it's interesting what is seen as quote unquote the part of the identity of the pride parade. So this year, and like I said, I've been to LA Pride, but I didn't San Diego Pride. So I can draw some conclusions of differences over the years. A lot more kids than I would expect for the actual parade, and even later into the afternoon, which is to me, it's very uncomfortable to have a, you know, 7-8-year-old person. And the reason I say person is because some of them were cross-dressing, possibly identifying or being trans, or I don't know how a 7-year-old could be trans, but they were dressed that way, and have right next to them a guy and one of those stripper thongs that just barely covers the crotch region but exposes all other body parts. To me, it seems so weird to have something celebrating sort of hedonistic sex next to children. But that seems to be the world we're living. I can't imagine that the straight pride parade in Boston had sexualized children next to naked men and women. I don't know.
Well, that parade was canceled because the Bruins lost the Stanley Cup Game 7. So... But William, you bring up an interesting point that really has always sort of bothered me about the left, but specifically about the gay rights movements, right? Like, I'm all for equal rights, obviously, and like do whatever you want. And if you want to have this parade and everything, that's fine. But why do you need to get the kids involved? Because that seems more insidious to me. And I specifically am thinking about, have you seen this online meme that pops up every once in a while where there's this kid that's become this like famous drag queen?
Yeah,
he's like 8 or something, and it's very disturbing because even the way he's dressed as a drag queen in like the thumbnail, because I don't even want to go past the, you know, reading a blurb about it and clicking the video, but the way he's dressed is not even like a realistic woman. It's so far, like, from the pictures I've seen of drag before and everything, and having, you know, gone to West Hollywood on Halloween and seen people in drag, it's so far beyond even what they do to exaggerate. So why get the kids involved here? It seems like they're pushing more of a what are they trying to accomplish?
Yeah, I don't know.
It seems
know.
To be about more weird, than pride.
It to me, it just feels so weird. I cannot exaggerate the number of trans kids, or at least I don't know if they're trans, obviously, but they were trying to either dress in drag or be trans. It was really disturbing. And just contrasting that, like, these are definitely under 16 kids, okay? You know, not sexually developed kids, next to all this just overly over-the-top sexualization. Now, I have no problems with pride parades having over-the-top sexualization. I think you could say that is part of the quote-unquote gay culture, whether that's right or wrong. That's it is part of it. But to bring in the kids just seems weird. Is that make me an old fart, Daniel?
Well, it just makes you rational. So, no. It's a little strange. Obviously, I've never taken part in that. I was dragged to the West Hollywood Halloween party 1 year, which was mostly sexualized costumes, men mostly, some children, although far fewer children. This was 2014-ish, so it, you know, we didn't really get the kids involved back then, I guess. So my question for you is, do you think more penises at the Halloween or more penises at the Pride Parade? And I mean fake.
Well, I think that probably more penises at the Halloween thing. And the reason why, this is the first year where the Pride Parade was televised. So there was a bit more of cleaning things up as you go through the television area. And then the normal things that you would expect to see in the wall-to-wall people, those were all the same, but those weren't necessarily on camera.
Interesting. So there were like two components of it. There was the televised portion and then the later
portion? The television portion was only set up to one part of the parade, if that makes sense. They had a, you know, just like the Macy's parade, they had the stage set up where behind them was the parade and then the cameras were all in that area.
What do you think about the word pride in this context? I'm curious.
Well, that probably has something, probably is the answer also to the question of why I don't go to many pride parades. For me, it's hard to feel proud about something I didn't earn. And I didn't earn being gay. In fact, my gay card has been revoked several times. So it's, some would say I haven't even earned it. In this context, I don't think it's the right word. And there is a sense, there is something to celebrate in the difference, the unique difference that quote-unquote the gay culture can bring to things. But it becomes very collectivistic very fast. I went to this Pride Parade because I found a value in it because of my work and things going on there. I wouldn't have gone otherwise. I don't connect with that community very much. That community being West Hollywood, not necessarily the gay community, although you could make that argument as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have that feeling about pride about anything that I didn't earn. So, you know, there's a lot of Hispanic pride and I guess there are maybe other buckets I fit into, although I can't think of them at the moment because I'm an oppressive half white male. But it always occurred to me that I just didn't, like, I was Hispanic and that was sort of incidental to who I am. Who I am is what I choose for my life. Who I am is more so my ideas and my actions and not the fact that I'm Hispanic. And so I think the left would say that's because, I didn't grow up in a traditionally Hispanic household. I didn't live in a traditionally Hispanic neighborhood, etc. But I don't know. The concept of pride when it comes to things like your heritage or your ethnicity or your sexuality, to me, there's a difference between being unashamed and celebrating those things and being proud of them. I don't know. It just never, even before I was an objectivist, it didn't really fit. Like, I didn't really get the concept of being proud of that kind of stuff. You can obviously like your heritage or dislike your heritage. You know, you can like tamales or dislike tamales if you're Hispanic. And if you dislike them, you're wrong. And Justin, you can like kielbasa or dislike kielbasa, but are you proud of kielbasa?
I think a lot of people at the Pride Parade like kielbasa. I'm just going to lay that out.
I would imagine there's some crossover in that Venn diagram, but
Polish sausage is the best sausage, from what I've been told. the interesting inverse to what you're saying is the whole idea of privilege. And this is where the notion of privilege comes from. Because psychologically, if you're used to having low self-esteem, then people acting with normal self-esteem seem like they're being proud all the time. And I even talk about this as a guy, right? Let's just remove race from this for an instance. And let's, and maybe this is equivalent to being a gay man, but as a straight man, when I had low self-esteem and when I didn't approach women and I didn't talk to women, I thought, and this is when I was a lot younger, this isn't now, but I thought guys who did that were acting in a way that they had some special extra thing about them, that they had this extra pride about them, that they had this extra feeling about themselves. And notice how this is what the incels take to the nth degree, right? Oh, well, they have something special about them. They have a privilege about them that makes them able to have that. But what that really is normal self-esteem. So I think a lot of this pride stuff is reactionary to having low self-esteem. And when you live in a negative headspace, when you live in a psychologically unhealthy headspace and you get used to that, you're not used to doing the healthy thing. Let's give an example outside of this. If you are not used to being direct and rational about expressing your feelings, you know, if you say, you know, I would not like to see that kind of movie because that movie makes me feel very uncomfortable, and therefore that would not be an enjoyable experience for you. Someone who does that can seem very almost prideful to you. It's like they have a certain privilege where how can they get away with saying that and I can't? And I think that's where a lot of this comes from. Am I way off base here?
I think that's exactly right. I think it's almost definitionally a self esteem issue. And I'm not saying this is what all people in the gay pride community do, William, but I do think that some people take the collectivistic nature of the things about themselves and use that as a substitute for real self-esteem.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. So question, for the straight people, the straight hosts, I was thinking, you know, looking at the group that I marched with, and then assuming similar for other corporate groups that were in the parade, what percentage of those were, you know, gay, bi, LGBT, LMNOP, and what percentage weren't? I would say it was probably, you know, probably 60, 70% of people from the community and others being supporters, whatever you want to say, allies, if you're in the social justice crew. My question to you guys is, what is the value of going to that kind of celebration, whether it's gay pride or, I don't know, the St. Patrick's Day parade in New York? What's the value as someone who isn't part of that community to going there? Now, the cynic in me says part of it is virtue signaling, but is there a rational value for people not part of that community to participate?
Do you want a legitimate benevolent value or what they think the value is?
I want
what are you
both.
Looking for?
I want both.
Because I think the value, what they think the value is what you're saying, which is I need to be seen as having the right opinions. I need to be seen in public as being the right kind of person, the person who is an ally for oppressed, marginalized groups. I would say if there's a benevolent value, Justin, you can add to this if you disagree or agree. But I think the benevolent value is, whether it's Pride or the local Asian American community festival or the local Irish parade or whatever it is, it's sort of learning about other cultures, experiencing things you may not experience in your day-to-day life. I'm actually one who thinks cultural appropriation is a good thing. So maybe finding things at the Polish community festival that you wouldn't have had otherwise and going, yeah, I'm going to make kielbasa at home. Because it's clearly the best sausage, right, Justin?
Right. I would have said bring kielbasa home with me from the Polish festival. But
I would never have phrased it in that sort of manner.
I mean, I agree with what you're saying in that sense. Like, that is the value. Like, you know, going to a night market out here with my Asian girlfriend, I see all the different type of Asian restaurants and stuff out here. Because, you know, night markets are a thing that started in Asia, and the Asian American community started doing it out here. But I think more fundamentally, something that is good about these benevolently that unfortunately has been collectivized is when you look at something like Mardi Gras, or you look at something like, you know, the celebration parade for your team winning the Super Bowl or the World Series or any of these sorts of parades, is Just people being free and happy. How often in today's society do you get to be in a place where people are just like, fuck it, I'm just going to be happy and not give a fuck what other people think, and I'm just going to enjoy myself. Now, that's why, William, I get disappointed when I hear, oh, there are kids in jock straps, or, you know, kids where you can't tell what gender they are because they're all being trans, because then you're taking it too far, and it becomes about the virtue signaling, and it becomes about the upsetting other people. But to me, the enjoyment of any of these events are when they're not taken too far to the second-handed extreme, and it's just people being themselves and just enjoying themselves. That's why I can enjoy, like, you know, if you're on the Vegas Strip on New Year's Eve, maybe it's packed as fuck, but if you find a nice quiet place, or not quiet, but you find a nice place to sit where people aren't bumping into you all the time, just to be around that kind of atmosphere is very energizing, because it's just like everyone just wants to be happy. And when in life are people like that anymore?
Yeah, just to close out this segment, my advice to folks, if exploring new cultures are interesting to you, or you've considered going to these kinds of events like Pride, I would say find a reason for yourself. Find something that you value, whether it's you know someone, you have an individual in your life who has that heritage or proclivities, as we say. Go and enjoy it and see the benevolence and try to avoid the cross-dressing sub-12-year-olds and the men scantily clad, if that's not your thing. But there's tons to enjoy. There is a benevolence there. Even in West Hollywood Pride, there was a very deep sense of benevolence. And that's the part that you can enjoy.
And as the LA City Council told me at the Halloween party through hundreds of posters plastered all over the streets, don't eat the wieners.
Oh no, there were so many of the danger dogs everywhere.
For those uninitiated with the LA culture, there are mostly Hispanic folks, although, you know, selling hot dogs with no license for food, whether you want to call that illegal or whatever. They're just unlicensed.
Yeah, I think you're not capturing the description well enough. These are bacon-wrapped, oversized sausages that they've cobbled together. It looks like driftwood. Put a propane tank underneath with the cheapest burner that you can find at a scrapyard connected on a regular commercial, like, half sheet cake pan that they warm the meat on and then serve.
Yeah, it's a bit dangerous. I wouldn't particularly partake. I mean, I like the entrepreneurial nature, but at the same time, caveat emptor, I wouldn't eat one of those. So.
Well, I thought Danger Dogs at the Pride Parade meant something else, so I'm all very confused now because this all had some weird sort of subtext in my mind. So why don't we just end this episode? What did we learn this trip, William?
Well, I learned that from Daniel that I should be suspect. I should suspect any straight people at Pride for either virtue signaling or appropriating my culture. So I need to test people to see if they're straight in order to allow them into my Pride festivities.
That's right. You got to be careful, William. Christians are aiming to take that rainbow back.
You mentioned that, but they did have the counter protest area with, you know, the God hates fags people right at the end of the parade. It was hilarious.
I love those people who like stand on the intersections at the in like Vegas or by like Disneyland, where they have those giant yellow signs with the black text about Jesus and everything. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I love those people just because of their commitment, as if they think they're making any sort of a difference.
They're virtue signaling too. So if we're all measuring who's virtue signaling their most, they're just signaling a different virtue.
Right. Their virtue signaling gets them into heaven, though. So what'd you learn, Daniel?
I learned that sometimes soccer can be interesting when there's actual scoring going on and it approaches almost a scoreless Super Bowl, 13-0. So, but otherwise, it's still horribly boring. Sorry. Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that everything that has been wrong with me in my entire life, including why I believe what I believe, is due to all my 27 years as a sex-starved male.
That's right. We hope you learned something this week. If so, you can tell us on all the social medias at The Midside. You can go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the past episodes of the show, including the Snyder series stuff and the Nolan notes. Check them out. You can go to themidside.com/store and get your swag for your next Pride Parade. It'd be interesting to see some Midside shirts at Pride Parades or other cultural festivals across the country. And you can go to Apple Podcasts or Google Play, subscribe to get this delivered to you the moment Justin presses publish on Midside Monday. Leave a 5-star review there, helps us. And of course, Liberty.me syndicates us. We appreciate our libertarian pals out there. What else do we got? We got the Patreon, patreon.com/themidside, where you can give a couple bucks every time we produce a piece of content, helps us keep the lights on. And most importantly, last but not least, when you're at these Pride Parades, why don't you tell a friend or a stranger or a child? Don't do that. just tell someone about the show who's of legal age to consume the show and all of its profanity and strangeness. Until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin Emelzeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a Father's Day. You know, women can be fathers, too.
The weirdest thing about Father's Day so far is all the other fathers wishing me a happy Father's Day. I don't know. Find that somewhat strange. But thanks.
Yeah, that happened to me. Somebody was like, happy Father's Day this past week.
And I was like, surprise, what? Justin.
What? Did I miss something?
Happy Father's Day, Dad. Oh, no.
I guess they just assume if you have like a full-time adult job, you must have a child. It's very strange.